Although African Americans had participated in every major conflict since the Revolutionary War, they had done so almost completely segregated. During World War II, more than 1.5 million African Americans served in the United States Armed Forces during World War II while still encountering unequal treatment and racial segregation in the United States military. And if this is the type of content that you enjoy, you can find more content like this at onemichistory.com. Also, if you want to support the channel, you can do so on my Buy Me Coffee or my Patreon page in the description below. Also, please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and go support the YouTube channel. Without further ado, let's get started.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With lynching and racial violence surging at the end of World War I, the years after the Great War saw very few changes with regards to social, political, and economic status for African Americans. Despite their service and sacrifice, Black veterans did not secure their own full citizenship. They were met only with more racism and more violence. So as the United States prepared to enter World War II, the treatment of African Americans increasingly became under scrutiny as another generation considered whether military service might be a chance to force action. Progress. After the disappointing treatment of African Americans during World War I, Black leaders sought some leverage from the United States war rhetoric to ensure equal treatment for African American servicemen during World War II, including a chance to actually fight and maybe gain the same respect afforded to white troops. Leaders like W.E.B. Du Bois urged Black Americans to put their grievances aside during the First World War. So at the start of World War II, Du Bois again asked Black Americans to fight for democracy, while sadly admitting that the First World War did not bring us democracy, and nor will the Second, but Hitler needed to be stopped. On April 16, 1940, the United States instituted the Selective Training and Service Act. It required that all men from ages 21 to 45 register for the draft. Civil rights leaders pressured Franklin Delano Roosevelt to allow Black men the opportunity to serve in integrated regiments. Although African Americans had participated in every single conflict since the Revolutionary War, they had done so completely segregated, and Henry Stenson, War Secretary, was completely uninterested in changing that status quo. So FDR decided that Black men could register for the draft, but they would remain segregated, and the military would determine how Blacks would be inducted into service. The Selective Service Act did allow for African Americans to join the military in numbers proportionate to their representation in the United States, and also provided for Black and white officers to be able to train together, and in addition to establishing an aviation training school for Black officers. After the United States entered World War II, African Americans created the Double V campaign in 1942 in support of the nation's war effort. The V was World War II's symbol that unified the war effort to achieve victory for democracy over tyranny of the Axis powers. So the Double V campaign called for a victory over fascism abroad and victory over racism at home. The Double V campaign had some limited success, and it helped create some legal and policy changes, but failed to achieve actual equality within the United States military. Around that same time, in 1941, Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed Executive Order 8802, which outlawed racial discrimination in the war industry. It established the Fair Employment Practices Commission to enforce the executive order, but they didn't actually have any authority to regulate employment practices and faced increasing resistance from southern states. Alabama Governor Franklin Dixon refused a government contract to operate cotton mills in state prisons rather than agree to the FEPC's non-discriminatory requirements. And without Southern states' participation, the Fair Employment Practices Committee was doomed. Just 1 year after the creation of the FEPC, African Americans comprised just 3% of all war workers. And by 1946, Southern Democrats had eliminated funding for the FEPC. So in June of 1946, the Fair Employment Practices Committee was dead. Despite African Americans' eagerness to fight in World War II, the same Jim Crow discrimination in regular society was practiced in almost every branch of the military. Many bases, training facilities were located in the South, and regardless of regions, all bases had separate blood banks, hospitals, medical staff, barracks, recreational facilities for black soldiers. White soldiers and local white residents routinely harassed them. And despite this, African Americans joined up in increasing numbers. In 1941, there were fewer than 4,000 African Americans serving in the armed forces, with only 12 officers. By 1945, there was 1.2 million black Americans serving in uniform, with about 4 million women joining the Women's Army Corps. The Women's Army Corps was a branch of the United States Army created as an auxiliary unit in May of 1942. While serving abroad, the military simply didn't think that African Americans were fit for leadership service or even combat. Both African American men and women were mostly relegated to labor and a service unit. And for the few who did make officer rank, they could only lead other black men and weren't allowed higher positions. These beliefs not only stalled the use of African American troops in combat, but it also excluded them from higher recognition for their service in World War II. It wasn't until 1993 that the first African American was awarded the Medal of Honor for his service in World War II. While black troops were initially barred from frontline combat, as casualties started to mount among white soldiers during the final years of the war, the military had no choice but to utilize African Americans as infantrymen, officers, and pilots, in addition to remaining invaluable in supply divisions. From August 1944 to November 1944, the Red Ball Express, a unit comprised mostly of black drivers, delivered gasoline, ammunition, food, mechanical parts, and medical supplies to the Third Army in France. They drove up to 400 miles on narrow roads in the middle of the night without headlights to avoid detection. In November of 1944, the 761 Tank Battalion became the first black division to see ground combat in Europe, joined the Third Army in France. The men helped liberate 30 towns under Nazi control and spent 183 days in combat. The Tuskegee Airmen, an all-black fighter group, escorted bombers over Italy and Sicily and flew almost 1,600 combat missions while destroying 237 German planes. Once again, despite these heroics, Jim Crow continued to be the law of the land for black servicemen. Black MPs stationed in the South could not enter restaurants where German POWs were allowed to eat. Private Bert Barotto talked about the racism within the military in a letter to Truman Gibson, the civilian aide for the Secretary of War. He observed a sign over latrine actually segregating a section of the latrine for Negro soldiers. The other was to be used by German soldiers and white soldiers. He recalled that the sign made him feel like the tyrant was actually being placed over the liberator. Nazi leaders understood this American hypocrisy and sought to demotivate black soldiers by confronting them on this very subject. Germans would drop leaflets mocking black troops, asking why would you serve a military that treats you less than human beings, and the leaflets would state things like, you've done this before, and look where it got you, and why does this matter to you? Black communities also faced an onslaught of racial attacks during World War II. In June of 1943, riots in Beaumont, Texas, and Detroit led to the deaths and injuries and economic loss, and only served to deepen racial hostility. The sense of pride from the African American war experience only served to grow the membership rolls of the NAACP. Their ranks grew from 50,000 in 1940 to 450,000 in 1946. The civil rights organization faced an uphill battle as white Southerners doubled down their efforts to prevent economic, political, and social subjugation of African Americans. These efforts arose partly out of fear returning African Americans would not continue their work as sharecroppers, and many did leave the South altogether. Mississippi Senator James O. Eastland spoke about white soldiers from the South coming home expecting to find the integrity of institutions of the South unimpaired, and that those boys were fighting to maintain white supremacy. Racial discrimination wasn't just limited to military service. It extended to veteran benefits as well. On June 22, 1944, the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, commonly known as the GI Bill, was passed. it was designed to reward military service. The GI Bill was often credited as creating the American middle class. Between 1944 and 1971, the federal government spent over $95 billion providing benefits to veterans. In 1948, the GI Bill made up 15% of the federal budget. It created opportunities for home ownership, higher education, vocational training, and provided capital for veterans to start their own businesses. Before the end of the war, black newspapers printed articles about the legislation and outlined eligibility requirements. The GI Bill gave black soldiers in the community hope that their service would give them unprecedented opportunities for economic advancement. As you would expect, the GI Bill led to a middle class that was overwhelmingly white. Black soldiers were denied access to programs within the GI Bill because the GI Bill was designed to accommodate Jim Crow. While the bill contained no language limiting racial segregation or excluding African Americans, it was also crafted with limited federal oversight. The bill gave all administrative responsibility to the states with limited congressional supervision. State authorities had virtually unchecked power to discriminate against black veterans. In Title III of the GI Bill, it made veterans eligible for low-interest home loans with no down payment, but very few black veterans were able to benefit from this. These loans were guaranteed by the VA, but because they required the cooperation of local banks, black veterans had to convince local banks to lend them the money. This proved to be a daunting task for black veterans because of the overwhelming majority of banks denied loans to black applicants. Home ownership was the primary driver of post-war economic security and wealth accumulation. It spurred the creation and growth of white suburbia. GI Bill completely failed to uplift black veterans and their families in the same way it had done white Americans. And once again, black people were excluded from the benefits of their military service, and the hopes of black veterans was crushed by racism. After World War II officially ended in September 2, 1945, black soldiers returned home to find that not only were they denied benefits and economic opportunities, but that their veteran status and military service made them targets for racial violence, especially those in uniform. For many veterans, the first confrontation with this post-war racial system was on the bus ride home. In February 1946, Marine Timothy Hood removed a Jim Crow sign from a trolley in Bessemer, Alabama. In response, the white streetcar conductor, William R. Weeks, shot Hood 5 times. As Hood staggered off, he was actually arrested by the chief of police, J.B. Fant. Fant then placed Hood in the back of his police car and shot him in the head with a single bullet. Fant would later allege that Hood had reached in his hip pocket to draw a gun, although there was no evidence that Hood was armed. The coroner's findings would rule this a justifiable homicide, and Fant was ultimately cleared. By this time, attacks on black veterans were slightly more likely to result in investigations and charges against white perpetrators, but they still rarely led to convictions or any actual punishment because many states barred African Americans and women from serving on juries, and because Jim Crow was so completely ingrained in every aspect of American society. In December of 1946, Harry Truman appointed a panel to serve at the President's Commission on Civil Rights, which recommended that more adequate means and procedures for protection of civil rights of people in the United States. When the commission issued its report in October 1947, among its proposals were an anti-lynching bill, laws against polling taxes, a permanent FEPC, and strengthening civil rights division of the Justice Department. In February of 1948, Truman called Congress to act on these recommendations, and Southern senators threatened a filibuster. Truman moved ahead on civil rights by using his executive powers. On July 26, 1948, he issued executive order abolishing segregation in the armed forces and ordering a full integration of all services. Executive Order 9981 stated that there shall be equality of treatment and opportunity for all persons in the armed forces without regard to color, race, religion, or national origin. The order established an advisory committee to examine the rules and practices and procedures in the armed services and recommended ways to desegregate. There was still considerable resistance from the military, but by the end of the Korean conflict, almost all of the armed forces were completely integrated. African Americans served in the Civil War, World War I, and World War II for the ideals of freedom, justice, and democracy, only to return to racial terror and violence. White Americans, intent on maintaining white supremacy and a racial hierarchy, targeted Black veterans with violence and lynching because they represented hope and the possibility of Black empowerment and social equality. The hope threatened to disrupt the entrenched social, economic, and political forces and to inspire large segments of the Black community to participate in activism that could deal a serious blow to the system of segregation and oppression that had been aligned for nearly a century and was rooted in the myth of the differences between the two races that is older than this nation itself. Despite this overwhelming injustice, the horrific acts on Black veterans suffered during the era of racial terror, they maintained the determined to fight at home for what they hoped to achieve abroad. This commitment contributed to the spirit that would launch the Civil Rights Movement. Thank you. I'm your host, Country Boy. And if you like this, you love this, you can find more like this at onemichistory.com. Also, if you'd like to support the channel, you can do so by buying me coffee on my Patreon page in the description below. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and support the YouTube channel. Peace.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.